Welcome to the BookTree podcast. What should your kids and teens be reading next? To answer that question, we'll be interviewing authors and illustrators, publishers and literacy experts, and other bookish people. We'll also look at current book news and trends and discuss issues around reading and writing. We'll look at the most burning question on all our minds: how do we get kids to read in these screen-obsessed times? Hosted by me, Corinne Rosmarin, journalist and writer, this is a home for all things books, children's and parents' books. After all, children become readers when they see their parents reading too. Come and join us, and let's find out what your kids and you should be reading next.
Welcome to the BookTree podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the BookTree podcast, episode 7. This is a very busy month. April is full of school holidays. It's Easter. There's the International Children's Book Day on Wednesday, the 2nd of April. It's World Book Day on the 23rd of April, which is apparently the anniversary of the author William Shakespeare. And there's loads of public holidays in between all of this, which adds up to a lot of time for reading. And we've got some wonderful ideas for you. I think the biggest thing I would say is get your kids off their screens and into their books. I know it's hard, and this is a constant thing that we have at the BookTree. People will send messages or emails asking, how do I get my children to read more? And really the only way that we can say works without any hesitation is to model what you want your children to do. If you want them to read, let them see you reading. And also have books available. Stock up on books. Go to your library. Go to your secondhand bookstores. Initiate some kind of book swapping group, like a little book club amongst all the friends, because books do get expensive and it's wonderful to share them. What's really drawn our attention to the need for our children to get off their screens is this Netflix series, Adolescence, which I'm sure many of you have either heard of or you've actually watched it. It's quite a grueling watch, I have to say. I'm halfway through it and it's just brought up such a sense of horror and fear for our children. And I don't want to react from fear, but I do think that we have to take it seriously. You know, when you look at the storyline, I won't give away too much, but basically it's focused on a young 13-year-old boy called Jamie, who seems like a sweet, smart kid who's just caught up in something that's bigger than him. And he ends up doing the absolute worst. He's accused of murdering a classmate. The whole investigation just goes around trying to understand what would bring a young boy to that point. And what is uncovered is that he is deeply traumatized by school bullying via social media. And it's all centered on something called the incel subculture. Incel, that's capitals I-N-C-E-L, stands for involuntarily celibate. And I did a bit of research into it, and it's basically part of a growing misogynistic subculture that blames women for men's feelings of rejection and loneliness. And it's just grown out of something that actually originally it was meant to be a celebration of being single, started by a young woman. It was taken over and it's now got this very dark, ugly subculture attached to it. And in this world, this young boy, Jamie, finds himself in a place where men openly hate women. They blame women for their lack of sexual success and happiness. It's very much based on the social media personality, Andrew Tate. You might have seen him in the news. He is dubbed the king of toxic masculinity. He's been accused of rape. He's a right-wing advocate. He's also been accused of extortion and human trafficking. He's got all sorts of charges against him. Definitely not someone you want your teens influenced by. And unfortunately, they are vulnerable when they're online and you don't know what they're seeing or what groups they are tapping into. So all of this just to say that it's put more focus in my mind on why we want our children to read books, to have pastimes that are healthy and wholesome, that get them outdoors, and for you as a parent, just to be aware of what your child is ingesting online. Obviously, it's always easier said than done, but if you do need some help along that, I firmly believe that a company called Clicked, K-L-I-K-D, which is run by two wonderful women, Sarah and Pam, are doing fantastic work. Sarah used to work with Emma Sadlier, the lawyer, and Pam is an expert. She's a psychologist and has done a lot of work in this area. Basically, they give resources for parents and educators to understand the digital landscape, to keep your teens safe online and for you to remain connected throughout their adolescence and trying to understand what they're exposed to. I will put the link to their company on the website. Okay, and then this month's guest interview is very special. I was sent a book from Jocana Publishers to review, and it was really an amazing read and had me quite emotional, as you'll hear in the interview. It's called Together Apart, The Story of Living in Apartheid. It's written by award-winning author and literacy scholar Solisa Guzulu and historian Atambile Masola. It's a very important book. You know, I think more important than ever, we need to understand the past in order to make sense of where we are as a nation today. And not only for South African children, for children around the world to understand terms like apartheid, colonialism. For children living in South Africa to understand why are schools and cities and rural areas so different? Where is this idea of inherited poverty and privilege coming from? How did apartheid affect people's lives living in apartheid? I grew up in a time where I remember very vividly I was living in the Cape, and we were always told that basically South African history began with the arrival of Jan van Riebeck to the Cape in 1652. That date is burned into my skull from all those history lessons. So the book actually aims to give a more accurate reflection of history, taking into account all the people of South Africa and where the real history of South Africa does start. So let's get into it.
We are very honored to have Solisa Guzulu, author of Together Apart, The Story of Living in Apartheid. We are very lucky indeed because I know you're a very busy woman, and today is special because we're going to talk a little bit about your book. But before I do so, I'd like to just introduce you by giving a bit of your background. You are a senior lecturer in applied language and literacy studies at the University of Cape Town. Solisa specializes in multilingual, multiliteracies education, teaching children how to speak, read, and write in two or more languages. She is also one of the founders of a network of reading clubs, Vulindlela Reading Club, Nalibali Reading Clubs, and the Stars of Today Literacy Clubs. She has written several children's books, including co-authoring the Imbokodo, Women Who Shape Us series, with Dr. Atambile Masola, who is the same co-author with this book as well, I know. She has translated many children's books from English to isiXhosa, including books by award-winning authors Astrid Lindgren, Nikki Daly, Sihle Isipho, Nontosho Kweni, Rufiro Mokgoli, and Nicholas Moritz. She won an IBBY Exclusive Books Award for Best Translation, and she has worked with Shale and Mary Ann Bester. I think I've covered most of it. I know there's a lot more that you do, and we will put up your full list on our website. But welcome.
Thank you very much, Corinne. It's so lovely to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. I actually have been following your career because I know that a while ago you made a lot of comments about why it is so important that we are dealing with the literacy crisis in South Africa. And I know from your background, this is a passion of yours. Before we go into your book, can you just tell me just briefly what motivates you in working in this literacy space?
What motivates me, Corinne, is that I was always a reader as a child. I grew up in a village in the Eastern Cape, staying with my grandparents, who, though they didn't go to school, encouraged me to read a lot and to write a lot. So I used to write a lot of letters to my mother, who used to be in Limpopo province, while I stayed in the Eastern Cape with my grandparents who couldn't read and write. So they used to dictate letters to me, and then I would write, I'd be their scribe. And then my mother would send letters to them and I would read them. So one of the things was that as a young child, people always looked at this child who was reading, and they never imagined that young children can be very much hooked on reading and writing. And I was receiving posts from the post office. So whoever went to town, we would give them the key to open our box in Indwe and bring the post. And they would see these letters addressed to me. And they couldn't believe that as young as I was, 9 years old or 8 years old, I was already writing letters. So when I discovered books, like reading my auntie's books, were doing junior secondary school at the time, and I was still in primary school, I was reading those books and finishing them. And then I discovered my mother's box with books and reading them. So this has been a lifelong thing for me.
It's so interesting because I feel like book lovers all have a fairly similar story. It's discovering books at a certain crucial age, and that world opens up for you and you're never the same again, right?
You're never the same again. And the important thing for me was that I discovered books in English and isiXhosa, but the books in isiXhosa were kind of scarce. We only relied on books that were prescribed for our grades, but we never had libraries that had books or books that were meant for children. So I was reading these books that were written for young adults, even though I was younger. And so when I went to high school, we sort of had a moving library, which was a trolley library that went from class to class. And this is where I got my books that I loved to read from there. But I was always reading all the time. And when I came to UCT as a student, I took both English and isiXhosa. So I never had to choose one language over the other. They were always equal to me. And I chose the subjects. And then I became a teacher. So hence the work in bilingualism and biliteracy development, because I do believe that children can learn to be bilingual and biliterate through reading.
That's amazing. It's actually another discussion. I don't want to go too far off course today, but I'm very interested in that idea of being bilingual, especially for young children in South Africa. We have so many different languages. And I often get sent questions about how do I raise a child to be bilingual from birth. I think we're going to have you back in again and talk about that. Let's get back to your book today, because I've been reading through Together Apart, The Story of Living in Apartheid. I have to say that it's made me quite emotional. I think for people of a certain generation, I grew up, was at school, in high school in the 80s, late 80s, around 87, 88. Just reading about it and comparing what I was taught in history to this book, like I say, I find myself quite tearful. It's a huge, momentous occasion to have this book, and I'm so grateful for one that you have written it. Can you tell me a bit about what inspired you to write the book?
It is exactly what you've just described, Corinne, that the history that we were learning in school wasn't covering this kind of history that we got to know about each other in South Africa. I also finished school. You finished just late 80s, and I finished school in 1993. And so this is a book that I would have loved to have as a child. You know, just like you in libraries, you have books such as books on space, books on animals, books on cars, those kind of geographical books that are nonfiction that you find in bookshops. We don't have anything that has to do with our history, our story as South Africans and how we came to be. And we thought that it would be interesting to write such a book. But because we were writing Imbokodo books before this one, we kept on mentioning colonialism and apartheid. And so when the publishers said, well, before you write another set of Imbokodo books, we think that you need to write this book on apartheid and colonialism, because it keeps coming up. And it made sense for us. It was a no-brainer, because then if we have this book and we now mention more of in the future books that we are going to write, we mention apartheid and colonialism, we know that the children can have a book to refer to in much more detail.
I do feel like when you read a lot of books, or even if you're just perusing social media these days, those terms are thrown around, colonialism, apartheid, and to understand the history and the roots of it, I think is so important. Which also takes me to my next question. Why do you think, if you had to tell children, why must we look back at history to understand where we are at now in South Africa? What would you motivate them to understand?
It's important because history has a tendency to repeat itself. At this very moment, we are in a very big historical moment where things are turning around. You know, we talk about fascism developing all over globally, and this we've learned about in history way before, and it's coming back again. So it is important for our children to understand our history so that they can understand their present and to understand their future, and also to prevent doing the injustices of the past and perpetuating them in our present and in our future. So it was very important for us, because many students, for example, even during the Rose Must Fall movement and Fees Must Fall movement, who came to UCT from high school, didn't understand quite deeply what the other students were on about when they were protesting about, you know, talking about coloniality of the institutions, coloniality of the curriculum, wanting a decolonized curriculum. People didn't know what they are talking about. And actually what the students who were older and more experienced with reading history, what were they agitating for, was that everybody should understand the history to understand how it is affecting us at the current institutions where we teach, where we learn, And so this is why this is important. We cannot wait until we are much older to understand our story. The other reason is that we live history every day. So when our children at home are questioning certain things and asking us, why are schools not the same? Why do we have these big schools that have big soccer fields and rugby fields and cricket fields, and then we find schools that have none, you know? So as a parent, you have to explain that, because now with schools, there's always like these tournaments that are arranged between schools. So it is now common to have a township school going to a suburban school for a weekend tournament. And when they get there, the children are just surprised at how much the others have or at how much others don't have. So those things need to be explained to children, which is why then we need to start from where they are, because they always question us about these things, about the homes we live in. Nobody's blind to them. You know, we can see that some people live in shacks, some people live in brick houses, some people live in suburbs, some people live in townships. And this is a consequence of our history. And it's important that we explain it to the children.
I do like the way that you've broached all of those topics. In fact, I found this such a comprehensive look at history, because you've gone right from understanding, you know, the late sort of Stone Age, where the very, very first ancestors in the Southern Africa, and how it became South Africa later, but how they sort of drifted down from the Southern Africa. For those who haven't seen the book yet, it is a wonderful combination of starting, as I say, back in the Stone Age, looking at all the different people who were living in Africa at that time. And then it goes into a sort of graphic comic strip, which has this main character called Makula, which is the grandmother, right?
Yes.
And the grandmother is talking to four children, and it's just a lovely, warm, casual atmosphere. They're chatting to her, and they're asking the kind of questions that I feel like older people start to feel uncomfortable asking, you know, saying straightforward, but my family is uncomfortable telling me the story, says one of the characters. Her name is Jessica. They think we should forget the past and move on with the new South Africa. And I think there is that tendency that we want to say, you know, sweep it with the Rainbow Nation brush, broomstick, and everything is fine now. Let's not go back into history. And I like your angle that you're coming from, which is saying, yes, we can move forward, but we can't move forward until we understand how we got where we are now. Because otherwise those kind of questions come up, just like you said. Why are our schools so different? The book then goes on to look at everything from the slavery, which is also very important to understand why was slavery so prevalent in Africa. And one of the questions I wanted to ask around that is, some children will say, well, I don't like history. It's not my subject. I'm not interested in history. And perhaps they're not even studying history, right? Because from grade 10, you can select your subjects. I know you've touched on it briefly. You said that we need to understand the past, but how can you talk to those children who say that history is boring?
So first, before I talk to them, you mentioned something important about the writing of this book, like the deep themes that we touch on. You know, at one point, we have these laws that have been created through the timelines. You know, we have the year and this law was made. But at the same time, the themes allowed us to focus on the specific daily issues that children experience, that we can then say, how did apartheid shape education? How did it shape the homes we live in? How did it shape the sports and arts and culture? So we had that. But we also wanted to go far back. Atambile, my co-author, talks of the deep history instead of using pre-history, because it's not like there wasn't history there in the deep history. So we wanted to go there to show innovation, that actually people lived before the arrival of the colonists in Africa. They lived and they had a particular way of doing things, and they had the developments and creativity and innovation that they were engaged with. So when we talk about Stone Age and we talk about, you know, Iron Age, there were developments there that were creative, showing that these people were innovating. But then we got interrupted by colonialism, the arrival now of Europeans. So it's hard to then imagine how that development could have been like if we were not colonized. So we wanted to show that. And then, of course, for children who say, history is not my subject, I honestly believe that the way to a child's heart is through a story. All children respond well to stories, whether they are in reading clubs or they are responding to bedtime stories at home or to the stories that the grandmothers tell when they are young. And history is our big story. It's a history of all South Africans, where we came from, what we did to each other, what we can try to undo and unlearn if it's a negative thing that we've learned through history, and things that we did well that we can build on. So I think every child who says they don't like history, I think they must try on this book and then report to us and tell us how this book has affected them as they began to read it. I've also had adults in our book launches who said, well, we have been ignorant because schooling has taught us that maths and science is important. So because of that streaming in schools where others go to maths and science, we have then been desensitized to historical stories that we would have enjoyed. It's not our doing, it's the schooling, because we begin with all subjects earlier on in the primary school, and suddenly from grade 10, we have to choose. So because we have to choose now, we chose maths and science, and now we no longer have the access to the historical stories, and we find this book very useful for us.
I think so, and I think maybe that's also the key to it, is we can hope that schools and libraries at schools will stock the book, encourage children to read it. Maybe it's part of a library session, or it's just even the life skills, you know, that everyone has this book and they can just talk through it. And that's the next question I wanted to ask you, because obviously race and racism is a very touchy subject. A lot of people get triggered by it. They feel defensive or they feel offensive. They need to fight the fight. How do you suggest teachers can approach teaching about apartheid in a classroom setting when you have all these children of different backgrounds and races? Do you think that maybe the book is just the talking point where you start the discussion from?
Yeah, well, I think the very fact that we have a comic at the start of the chapters was precisely to answer your question about how teachers can approach the story of racism and history in our country. So it is the children, and the children in the comic represent South African children in the four races that were constructed during apartheid. So you have an African child, you have a colored child, you have a white and Indian. So we wanted that representation because all of these children want to know. It's not a matter of that only a certain group of children need to know about the history and others don't need to know. All of them, they are friends, and they are learning from Makulu this history together. And so we felt that that's a good way to start, because they are all inquisitive about it. And also they refer to themselves to say, for example, in chapter 5, where we talk about love and relationships, they are saying, oh, Makulu, if we were living in apartheid, this means that Jessica and Aiden wouldn't be my friend. And so the story unfolds from there to say, yes, because there were laws that legalized relationships and marriages and friendships. We were told we couldn't mix, but now we can be friends in school. So beginning in that way, it makes children understand better that kind of history. It's not a matter of pointing to you and you. It's a point of saying our grandparents, this is what they did. It doesn't mean that we have done it ourselves, but we can now shape a new history where we then undo these injustices that were created through our history.
I feel like I actually noticed chapter 5, which is titled Let the People Love, Love and Relationships. Throughout the book, you've picked out the heroes, the people who quietly or loudly, you know, fought for what they believed in, stood as a representative of how South Africa could be. And that brings an element of hope that sort of threads its way through the whole story, because otherwise it's a sad story. You know, the story of apartheid, it's a hard story. All those positives that you've touched on, the stories of courage, resilience, love, triumph, that really makes the book a different kind of read for me.
Yes, it does, because this was what we aimed for, because we know that this history can make people sad and feel guilty and, you know, in all sorts of ways. So we've got to tell stories like real stories that happen, because what happens is that we tend to see history as these big stories of war, big stories of maybe forced removals, big stories of Sharpeville massacre, big stories of 1976 protests. But we don't talk about the everyday relationships that people had. And so when we write like these hopeful stories that even during apartheid, there were people who were friends We have Noni Jabavu being taken by the Smart family that sent her to the UK to live in the UK as a 13-year-old. And Jan Smuts, who is known as one of the apartheid, you know, leaders, was actually friendly to Noni Jabavu's family. You know, we also see Jacob Lidwaba and Father Harrison. Trevor Harrison talks about Jacob Lidwaba as a friend, not just as a boy. You know, people would have referred to him as just a boy, even if he was an adult. But to him, he was a dear friend. And so we bring in these stories that thread together how people form friendships. I mean, the story of the Federation of South African Women and how the women, like two friends, Ross Ainsley and Amy Rainstein, used their passports to buy tickets for Lillian Goyi and others to be able to travel because they were fighting together. So there's that element. And then we bring into sports and we show how in sports people were denied opportunities, but at the same time, these people had the courage and support of their communities to compete in sports and they succeeded against all odds. You know, that's a story of hope, but also saying to children, if apartheid wasn't there, these people wouldn't have struggled in the way that they struggled during apartheid.
And I think that that's also the lesson that we're seeing being played out in the world right now. Like you said earlier, the rise of fascism and what's going on in America and Europe. And I think that the power of books and a book like your book is that you're humanizing a moment in history. You're providing us with stories that bring it to life in a very different way from a series of facts. And so I'm always telling people to read more books, but I think this is really a book that every child should have on their bookshelves. And lastly, as I mentioned, talking about fascism and the times we live in, because we're living in such times of extremes and social media tries to polarize us, we either are put into the camp of sort of being woke, a liberal snowflake, or you're in the camp of being a Trump supporter with no heart or empathy. I think it's so tricky for children to tread that ground and find what they believe in without hearing all the voices of either their parents or the society they find themselves in, right? Because it's just so polarizing. And maybe that's why I'm just such a fan of this kind of book, is because I do believe it's helping them to start making up their own minds, to think for themselves.
Definitely, because there's a lot of noise that is going on and there's a lot of polarization, which is something that I like when some South Africans came out and say, this is not my experience. I'm not experiencing genocide. You know, as a white South African, I'm actually waking up from my house in this place and I'm seeing no one taking my land. Children do need to hear stories like that where people speak back to the lies or to the misinformation that is being spread out there. And also to say, everybody in South Africa does experience in some way, one way or another, crime. And all of us are experiencing it. So it's not just a certain people who are experiencing crime. So I think we need those positive role models in young children who are able to sit with them and hold the moment with them. But a book like this is a beginning. It's kind of a conversation starter exactly about these things. And then that adult can hold the space for the children, because it is even difficult for adults to understand this moment, for them to deal with their own feelings of what is happening in this current moment. So we tend to then generalize, or we say Americans, as if all Americans are causing this. We tend to say South Africans, as if all South Africans are causing, you know. So we need to hold the children so that then they can make up their own stories and see truth for themselves.
Wonderful. I'm so happy that you've written this book. I'm going to definitely do a full review on the website, and I would encourage everyone to buy one for the schools, for their friends, and for their own homes. Thank you so, so much for your time today. I'm so grateful. And next time I'll have you back on and we'll talk a little bit more about bilingualism.
Thank you so much, Corinne.
It's time to dive into the pages of the book review.
The book reviews this month are all focused on the South African theme, and I have focused on a particular age group because I think that this is a wonderful time to reach young children. The three books I've chosen are from about ages 3 to 8 or 9. The first book has just landed in my desk, and it is by Zuleika Patel. The book is called Brave Like Me,
and it's the true story of her braveness in face of discrimination. Zuleika captured the headlines a while ago. You may remember she was a Pretoria schoolgirl and she stood up against the school rules, which were very archaic around the hairstyles that the girls could have. This beautiful book traces the roots and the seeds, I would say, of her activism. Zuleika is the child of mixed parents. She has a black mother and an Indian father. And when she was much younger at school, she felt picked upon as the children all laughed when she wanted to enter a speech competition. She felt like she stood out for all the wrong reasons, that maybe she wasn't clever enough. One of them, in the book, you see one of them throwing a paper airplane that sticks in her beautiful cloud of hair. And she comes home and her father sees how unhappy she is. And he gives her a little family history lesson, explaining how she is perfect as a combination of both her parents and their parents. And this is the aspect of the story that I really enjoy, because I wonder how many families share the stories of their ancestors with their children. You know, we don't always live with our grandparents these days, or even our extended families. So many of those family stories are lost along the way. It's really good to tell your children the history of their family, their background. Share as much as you can. It doesn't matter what your great-grandmother did. It doesn't matter if they just were very brave because they came out to a new country. But all of those live on in that child's memory and make them feel stronger. I am forever grateful to my late aunt for writing down a brief history of my mom's side of the family, right back to our great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents and why they moved around the world. So coming back to the book, the story continues then later in life when Zuleika famously challenges the school rules. And facing the racism and discrimination, her friends and her plan a march, which obviously captured the world's attention. And she managed to actually change the school rules on how they could wear their hair naturally. And that one act of courage really did set a change in South Africa as well. Today, Patel has dedicated her life to social justice. She works in the areas of anti-racism, decolonization, youth empowerment, climate change, economics, and gender-based violence. I found this a quietly powerful book. It packs a punch for your child to believe in themselves and in their ability to change the world. There's so much that's not going right in the world at the moment that to have one person who shows how it doesn't take much more than courage and belief in yourself is very powerful. Brave Like Me by Zuleika Patel is recommended for children around age 3 to 8. The next book is a beautiful collection of South African poems and songs. It's called All That I Am, and it's edited by Refilo Mahlohle. This one is recommended for children ages 2 and up. And I've thought about it because we recently went away with a family who have a child with mixed Zimbabwean and Sotho heritage. And their child is nearly 2 and was learning nursery rhymes and songs. And we were talking about how all these are only in English. And I remembered this book. We need these books. They are filled with African-inspired verses, songs, rhymes. It's been put together with 17 esteemed contributors, and they cover all 11 languages, which is quite a feat. I love the illustrations, which are also bright and colourful. They are done by Katleho Kiagale. The book is quite big. It's just bigger than an A4, and it runs to nearly 100 pages. This makes me think of one of those treasuries of nursery rhymes, and it's going to be a South African equivalent. It's a perfect book to gift and also just to keep for bedtime reading or to use in a classroom. I think the only thing I would add to this book is that it would be amazing if they would bring out a CD version, or maybe that's a bit old-fashioned CDs. I don't even know if people have CDs anymore, but definitely like a scan code where you could hear these songs and poems being spoken by the various authors who contributed them. Because I do wonder how do you know what rhyme to use when you're saying the different words. So Pam McMillan, if you're listening, I think you should bring out a spoken word version of All That I Am. And finally, the last book is called The South African Alphabet of Affirmations. This came out about a year or two ago, but I thought about it when we were putting this issue together because it's been edited by 10 authors. It's basically a modern alphabet book offering affirmations. They're centered on children of color, and they are spoken in all the 11 official languages. It's really a book for all children, though, because it's just teaching children positive affirmations, words to say that remind them of their own strength and their own abilities.
For example, one of the words, mukela, is accept, welcome, embrace. And it made me think of all those cute little memes you have with a little girl repeating her affirmations. I am brave, I am strong, I am beautiful. This is the same kind of idea, but obviously all the different 11 languages are used for the affirmations. And some of the words, so for example, you have Izwe, which is nation. And the affirmation is, I am a child of this nation. I am my ancestors' successors. I am African. Some of the other words are Londola, which is Shivenda, and it means care, diligent. I take care of myself. I hold my head high. I also take care of my surroundings because we have only one earth, our home. So you can see the range applies to both yourself and to the world. There's all sorts of words like happy, and the word happy is actually Afrikaans word. I am happy. I laugh loudly from my belly. I start my day with joy and gratitude. I heal and grow each time I jump with glee. I love these words. I'm a big believer in affirmations. I give them to myself. So I think if we can start our children doing them from a young age, it could only be a positive thing. That's the wrap up of all our books this month. I hope that you can all share your feedback on the books. Let me know if you enjoyed them. Please subscribe, leave a review, and share the podcast with anyone else you think may enjoy it. Until next month, enjoy the holidays and get your kids reading.